Welcome back to On the Other Side. It's been a hot second since releasing an episode, so I'm super excited to be sharing this one with Dan Romero and Jesse from Farcaster and Base, respectively. This is such a fun episode on the importance of distribution in on-chain social networks. This was recorded a couple of weeks ago, so this was sort of in the height of the frames mania. We talk a little bit about what's possible in terms of the future of transacting on Farcaster within Frames. That is officially live, which is super exciting. But I think this conversation is honestly kind of timeless in terms of distribution networks and contextualizing social activity and on-chain activity. I do have one super quick ask before we jump into this episode, which is just if you have guests that you really want to hear on the podcast, please let me know. Dan Romero was like a very highly requested guest, so super excited to have him on this episode. Jesse Pollock, of course, I've had on before. If there are other people that you're really excited about that you want to have conversations on this pod with, let me know and we can definitely make it happen. All right, let's jump into the episode. I am here with Dan Romero from Farcaster and Jesse Pollock from Base, which is kind of the dream team for consumer social. Thanks for coming on the pod, guys. I'm super excited to have you both here.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here.
I cannot wait to talk about Frames and Farcaster and Base and distribution networks in Web3 social. We don't have a ton of time, so I do want to make sure we have time for like brief intros. So maybe I'll throw it to Dan. You can give a little bit of background on you and what you're building, and then Jesse.
Yeah, so I've been in crypto 10 years next month. I was at Coinbase for 5 of those years, and I had the privilege of working with Jesse quite closely on the consumer business, so kind of Coinbase.com and the mobile app. The kind of last 3 years I've spent working with also another former Coinbase colleague of mine, Varun Srinivasan. We've been building Farcaster, which is a decentralized social network, a protocol-based social network. And over the last couple of weeks, we've had a lot of growth. So naturally, people want to talk about it.
I'm Jesse. Worked with Dan and Varun at Coinbase. Varun actually hired me and managed me. And Dan was a partner of mine for a long time on the consumer business. And I lead all things Base. And, you know, I've been building that for the last 2 years. And we've been spending a lot of time building with Farcaster folks, which has been awesome.
Yes. I forgot that you guys both worked at Coinbase. So kind of cool to have you both here. So I want to sort of dive right into Farcaster and Frames. And some interesting context around this for me is that I have for a long time kind of been like an anti-Twitter clone for Web3 social. I know I've tweeted about this, Dan, you and I have gone back and forth about this on Twitter. And so like candidly, I think for a long time I was like, okay, Farcaster is interesting, but like I don't know that I get it. And I think that is how a lot of people have felt until very recently with the introduction of Frames. And I think what got me really excited about Frames, and we'll kind of go into like a brief overview of what Frames are, but what got me really excited is that it started to make me understand what's possible with Web3 social or on-chain social that I just didn't get before. And it felt like the real net new thing that's possible. And so maybe, Dan, you can give a little bit of context on like what Frames are and why you introduced them to Farcaster when you did. Like, what was the story there?
Yeah, so let me just agree with you in the sense that I think a Twitter clone, which Farcaster for the last 3 years has very much felt like until Frames, was not a winning strategy. I think where we approached it is we needed the basic table stakes social features, like the ability to post, you know, images, be able to reply, recast, like, all of that is just, you need that in order for the kind of network to work. Outside of you having some brilliant new social primitive right out of the gate, which we didn't. So kind of our view was, let's go build a protocol. Let's get like kind of a basic app up and running that we can get actual people to use. And we spent 3 years kind of, I always say beg, borrow, and steal in the sense that just we found the group of, you know, quirky people on the internet who were willing to deal with all the rough edges. And you know, ideologically pure, great. Other people just ended up finding their tribe in terms of their other kind of people on the internet strangers that they kind of vibed with. But for the most part, we never were able to get anyone with a significant Twitter audience, with maybe the exception of Vitalik, to spend a lot of time on Farcaster in the early stages. I think Frames changed that. And let me describe Frames and then kind of I don't think it's as exciting, but why we launched it when we did. So Frames allow any developer to make a post on Farcaster, which is similar to a tweet, interactive. And if you think about a Twitter post today, you have text, image, video, and then there's one type of post that Twitter allows you to have interactivity with. It's a poll. But that's defined by Twitter. You can't change the functionality of it. You can't kind of make it any different. It's kind of like how Twitter defines it, and that's it. Contrast to what a frame is it basically allows a developer to have this little canvas inside of a cast, a tweet, and it gives you an image, up to four buttons, and a text input. That's it. So it's not Neuralink. It's not OpenAI. But what's really powerful about it is it's entirely permissionless. It is decentralized out of the gate. And I think where developers have really taken off, just showing their creativity in the last, it's 2.5-3 weeks old, is the ability to kind of use the kind of underlying Farcaster protocol, which itself is permissionless, right? The social graph and APIs, to create on-chain experiences, despite the fact that Frames don't even have the ability to do something natively on-chain. So you have all these really clever people, and a huge shout out to Jesse in the sense that, I mean, we launched it on a Friday and there was a Frames hackathon in New York on a Sunday that, you know, Jesse was sending pizza to. Like, I think the base team realized very quickly that this kind of canvas for developers was going to be a powerful thing, especially for crypto developers who, and I know this is an interest of yours, are lacking distribution. Like, how do I break through the noise in a world where Twitter says, if you put a link in a tweet, we're going to nerf you in the algo? Frame is a link. That's actually what it is. And so basically what Farcaster is saying is like, no, we like links. Like, put links in the feed and let meet users where they are in a mobile app and allow them to kind of interact and then potentially, you know, get some delightful experience or some benefit on chain.
Totally. Jesse, first of all, for listeners, when Dan said we found weird, quirky people on the internet who wanted to use Farcaster, Jesse raised his hand. must call that out. But also, from your perspective, Jesse, I kind of want to hear like the holy shit moment that made you immediately realize Base needed to jump on Frames.
I mean, we didn't have any heads up from Dan and Vroon or anything. I just saw the cast from Vroon, and I saw the cast in Vroon. I was actually in San Francisco at another event that I was doing, this real world Ethereum event with a bunch of really smart people organized by Dymo, which is building a payments app. I was just on my phone. I saw the cast from Vroon and Dan, and I immediately was like, this is it. This is the inflection point in when the world's coming on chain. And I've been kind of talking, oh, we're going to hit an inflection point. Like, you know, we don't know when it is. And I think seeing Frames and being like, oh, now we finally have the ability to do crypto things in a social feed. That for me was just an aha light bulb moment. And so I messaged my team. I was like, hey, everyone, go. And so we launched a grants program for Frames within 3 hours with BountyCaster. We got it out Friday afternoon. We launched our first open source tooling for Frames late that night on ChainKit, which has a whole Frames component. We sponsored this hackathon on Sunday, and we just started sprinting. And it's really been a sprint ever since. I think I've worked every day since Friday. Dan and me and Varun have talked often on Saturday and Sunday. I'm being like, hey, I'm dropping a frame. We're dropping a frame. We're trying to fix this thing. So yeah, I feel like this was, it was a long time coming, and Farcaster kind of captured the thing that we were all looking for and dropped it.
Yeah. I mean, the speed at which Base picked up Frames and started running with it was very cool to see. And I think in general, you know, for a lot of people, myself included, Frames started to feel like the first time where I could see Web3 social or on-chain social becoming more expressive and like really breaking out of the form factor of just, you know, the social feed into something that was like very interactive and going beyond what the client itself sort of originally gave users. And so I think that was really exciting. And I think one of the things that's most fascinating about Frames is that they really would be nothing without the distribution network that Farcaster provided. You know, sort of like contextualizing these things in a social graph. When I think about how that network is built out, I kind of feel like there are two different approaches. One is like the more friend tech based approach, which is like bootstrapping on an existing network like Twitter, which is how friend tech sort of built their social graph and then introduced a net new on-chain component with that network. And then there's the forecaster approach, which is much more like, okay, let's build a social graph from the ground up. Let's build a network of people from the ground up. And so Dan, maybe you can talk a little bit about what it looked like to actually build that distribution network and that social graph.
Yeah. So I think where I grew up on the internet, in terms of the early days of Web 2, I was in college. And so I experienced the Facebook app platform. I experienced the open API era of Twitter. And that was actually a large inspiration for wanting to work on Farcaster is, you know, the original name for the project was RSS Plus. It was, could you make a kind of decentralized, simple protocol competitive with, you know, Web 2, specifically around short text posts? And obviously the idea is kind of morphed over time. But I think where I've just intellectually and same for Varun, the reason we're building Farcaster is like our belief is if we can get a social network to a sufficient number of users, and I don't actually know quite yet how many people you would need. So something on the order of, and this is not just people signing up, but people using it every day, right? The hard number to move. So maybe it's on the order of 500,000 people or 5 million people, but at some point, you can actually get to a flywheel where you have enough people using a social network that's a protocol that developers are now coming by default to say, hey, this is where I actually want to launch a new social product because it's going to be easier to get distribution, right? And then you get yourself a flywheel. And actually, to use Apple as the example, that's I think people forget the original iPhone didn't have an app store. The first iPhone, the first full year, did not have an app store. Everything was built by Apple. There was some like janky way that you could build like a JavaScript, basically PWA for those, you know, kind of paying attention, the stuff that happened last year, these progressive web apps. But basically there was no way to kind of add functionality to your iPhone other than what Apple did. And then a year later, after they had sold, you know, on the order of 10 million iPhones in that first year, they released the App Store. And I think that mentality for us was always, okay, so we can go build a bunch of developer primitives early on, but the hard problem for developers is not the technology. That's like a sufficient condition. It's a necessary condition. The sufficient condition, the thing that actually will really get developers to come and start building and create a flywheel is you have to have the users, because that's the hard thing, right? Getting users is the hard thing for developers, especially in crypto. And I think where we decided to launch Frames when we did is we actually launched a proto version of Frames last year. We had this kind of like mint button for Zora links. And we were using Open Graph, the kind of like hacky thing that's actually powering Frames underneath the hood for those who are paying attention at home. And we just basically made it so that if you're an NFT website, you could actually list the NFT and then like have a mint button appear. So rather than just like a standard link with an image and, you know, the title, we would just append a mint button and it would actually kick you out to the website. And so actually a bunch of the NFT platforms added that. And so I think we kind of had the idea, it's like, oh, this is interesting. Like people are very keen to make adjustments on their website to get a little bit better functionality in the feed. But we just had so many fewer users using the app. Our version of like, if we had launched Frames earlier, and I'm not exactly quite sure why we did when we did, but I think what was the kind of important condition for why Frames became such a kind of moment for Farcaster and crypto in general is we had spent 6 months both getting the protocol to permissionless. So Farcaster itself underneath the hood is at a place where anyone can sign up. You don't have to use a centralized app. You can kind of get a full copy of the data yourself. And then I think that the other important thing is we had spent a lot of time kind of grinding the total number of people using, you know, Farcaster, the protocol, up to something on the order of about 5,000 people. So, and a lot of those people were developers. And so kind of it was the right kind of set of conditions that when we launched it, you had a sufficient number of people who could also build the frames, easy to build, right? You could build one in an hour or two, and a lot of the stuff that Base doing make it even easier. But you also had people who could be the kind of like users of the frames, right? Whereas if it had strictly been a developer primitive, it's like everyone launches a frame, but no one's there to click it. It doesn't matter. And I think the thing that was a little unexpected is that it actually ended up driving signups. So because developers started to come up with these really creative frames, and we could go through a few examples, we had a massive influx of people sign up for Farcaster and you know, 10x growth to the total number of people using the protocol every day in 2 weeks. And so that's the kind of thing in a startup that you can never predict. There was no, you know, we didn't do a model and saying, oh, Frames is going to 10x our user base. It kind of happens. And so I think what we have been really focused on is trying to just kind of keep the site up, keep the stability of the protocol up, and then be able to just keep doubling down on what's working with Frames. And big shout out to Base, because they've, I think, been really patient with us, because there's just been a bunch of stuff that broke, obviously, when you 10X. 2017 Coinbase memories, which I went through with Jesse. But I think we're at a point now where things feel pretty good, and we're kind of ingesting this new group of people, and kind of getting to a place of like, okay, like what's next? Like how can we actually extend the functionality of Frames to bring even more people on chain?
And one thing from the Base perspective is, I think as we've, you know, been building for the last year and a half, this theme of distribution has been one of the things we've heard most consistently of like, you know, if I'm building, you know, on chain, I want to figure out how to get the most distribution. And a lot of people have come to Base for that because of our relationship with Coinbase. And I think one of the paths for distribution, particularly distribution of assets, is through Coinbase. And I think one of the ways we thought about Frames and Farcaster was, oh, wow, Base has historically been the best place to go get distribution because of our relationship with Coinbase. Here's another way for us to differentiate in terms of making Base the best place to get distribution if you're building, because the most users are going to be there and because the most assets are going to be there. And so we leaned really aggressively into that. And I think it's playing out. You know, if you look at Base on Farcaster, we have the largest channel. We just crossed 100,000 followers. I have the third most followers in the whole platform. And so if you're building on Base, not only are you going to have the most active users who are transacting there, not only are you going to have the most assets and access to Coinbase with all of its reach, you're also going to have the most access to the whole Farcaster network and this whole social graph that's starting to be built there. And so for us, that felt like a no-brainer. It's like, let's just keep doubling down on making Base the place where you get distribution. And Farcaster is one incredibly new, very fast-growing channel for that.
Yeah, for sure. I think what's interesting to me here is when I think about distribution, I think there are like a few different things that play into that. So one of them is like just purely discoverability, which is just, you know, how many people can I reach with this? But I think to me in crypto, a lot of distribution is actually much more nuanced, meaning that mm-hmm. I actually care even more about something like trust when it comes to distribution mm-hmm. and building those relationships. And I kind of feel like that social fabric is very fragile on Twitter, because of course Twitter is constantly tweaking things. And so having this like crypto native social graph is exciting in the context of saying, okay, we can build on a more robust, censorship resistant sort of distribution channel that goes beyond discoverability and actually starts to build these webs of trust. And so I say all of that to sort of pose the question around like, what do you think is actually like the most interesting nuance around distribution and consumer social? Is it this trust factor? Is it just a pure discoverability play? Like, I'm curious in your mind why distribution is so important. I use Frames as an interesting example for like that flywheel. But yeah, I'm curious like what distribution actually means for each of you in the context of Web3 social.
Yeah, I would just broaden it to crypto more broadly and just say, where do people, if I'm launching something new in crypto, where am I launching it? And I think, you know, prior to maybe 3 weeks ago, the clear answer is Twitter is, you know, that's where most people, you know, crypto Twitter, right? That's where people spend time. You could try posting it on Reddit. You can try getting it in, you know, some of the media, but there's just a lot of noise out there and it's hard to like kind of break through to people. Whereas naturally, if you can get, you know, kind of big influential crypto Twitter accounts to start talking about your thing, whether for good or for bad, that's going to bring a lot of attention to it. And so it's kind of generating that conversation is the go-to-market, I think, for most things in crypto. That said, I think Frames offers something slightly different because there is an actual potential for a crypto economic, you know, on-chain action as a result of something that shows up in your feed, not a click to a website and then kind of go through that website, connect your wallet. This is literally one click. And actually, in the case of the examples that I think Base has been powering, it's one click. You don't have to connect a wallet. Right, we're adding transaction support to Frames because I think that's an important primitive for developers and gives them more creative freedom. That obviously has a security downside in the sense that we have to be really thoughtful about how we do that, because naturally, if you're connecting a wallet, there are downsides potentially. So hopefully we can kind of execute on that well, because I think trust is a really important part. But I think one of the magical things about Frames right now is you can click on the button, and because the protocol itself is permissionless, the developer behind the scenes is saying, oh, you know, Chase just clicked this button, right? You opted in. Go look up where Chase's, you know, ENS wallet or the hot wallet that you use in a kind of, you know, Coinbase wallet or MetaMask today. and drop an NFT in that wallet. So boom, you didn't have any risk. You didn't have to connect to anything. And so I think it starts to create a new user experience from an onboarding standpoint into any new type of crypto-enabled, you know, project, company, game, whatever way you want to play that. And then I think a second thing, which we're already starting to see, is, you know, the first week there was a lot of just like, oh, follow, like, recast, like as in like take these three actions and then you can get this, right? Because the developer can go check that. I think people kind of got annoyed with that, and people started to realize like, huh, maybe I don't want to be recasting every frame to all my followers. That feels a little much. And so I think you've seen a natural evolution very quickly of people being like, oh, well, click this frame. And if you, you know, have the active badge on Farcaster, which is kind of like a proxy for you have some number of followers, you kind of are kind of good ratio from a signal to noise basis. Again, all permissionless ability to calculate this. The developer then can say, okay, great, you're eligible. And so you can kind of have this proof of work component to interacting with the frame. And so I think there's just going to be a rich exploration for developers to actually take the kind of social signals that exist on Farcaster. And then just as important, the on-chain signals that exist both as a result of frames, but also any of your previous history, right? Uniswap, great example. Maybe you used Uniswap back in, you know, 2019. If you did, then maybe someone's going to actually target you with the frame to say, you're a DeFi OG. Like, I have this new project, like you get some benefit on this, or you're able to get some kind of token gated experience as a result of clicking on a frame. And that's all obviously just kind of looking at what's happening on chain. And so that is actually, I think, what's really exciting from a distribution standpoint is that it's going to offer new ways to kind of like target very kind of specific groups of people based on, effectively credentials or proof of work, which I think is far better than the kind of standard model of drop a link on Twitter, hope people rush to get there and then mint out. And then there's always the risk of potentially, you know, because Twitter's not actually thinking about security from a link standpoint, or at least they just haven't traditionally, you're not thinking crypto native, right? And any link where you would potentially doing a transaction on Farcaster, we should get to a place where the kind of like standard is like we're doing some security screening because there's some great tools out there now. And obviously Coinbase Wallet's a great example of that, that's built in today.
Yeah. And so I agree with all that Dan's saying. And I think going back to your point around trust, the thing that makes all of that even more powerful is that because it's built on an open, permissionless on-chain protocol, developers can trust that they will not be deplatformed and the APIs will not be shut down. And they will not lose their distribution. Because if you look at the history of these things in the past, you look at the Facebook app platform, you look at the Twitter APIs, what happened is there were all these great APIs. And then one day, Big Co came around and said, hey, actually, yeah, we love that you built these apps that grew our business, but we really want that. And you can't build them anymore. And you can't take them anywhere with you. And that, I mean, that's like the worst sin that you can commit against developers is give them something and then take it away. And I think the thing that's really powerful and that Dan and Vroon have done an incredible job with this Farcaster is they've built into the protocol the open permissionless nature, and they've made it so it's not don't be evil, it's can't be evil. And I think that means that everyone can trust that this distribution isn't a kind of a flash in the pan. It's going to be here long term and that they're going to be able to access it long term. That's super, super important. Same totally. With Base too, by the way. Like Base is also open permissionless and cannot deplatform you. And so people can build there and know that no matter where they are in the world, they have the same access. And I think like this is this next generation of the internet that's on chain that we're seeing emerge that's going to be much better for developers and as a result, much better for users.
And even if you don't like, you know, platform dynamics on how a certain client is surfacing different posts or frames, like that a new client could emerge at any time, which I think has always been like something that is intuitively interesting to people from a sort of crypto social angle and outside of crypto as well. But it's cool to see that emerge within the Farcaster community. Like even, you know, these new clients, like, you know, Supercast is a client that's becoming more popular. There's a client specifically for corporations or companies that are trying to run accounts, which we have tried to do at Uniswap. We're still experimenting. But in any case, I think that the sort of freedom of expression that comes with having this sort of censorship resistant distribution network is like really exciting and interesting from both the creator side and the developer side. I know we have to wrap up in a minute, but before we do that, I want to just give you each an opportunity to shout out your favorite frames that people should check out, sort of get context on frames.
I might take Jesse's, but we'll see. Maybe he has a second one. Mine's the Girl Scout cookie one. I still think it's my favorite because I think it's actually starting to show where crypto can cross over to kind of not just digital. Right. I think generally the use cases that have worked really well with crypto are kind of endemic to blockchains like NFTs. And I love NFTs. But I think one thing that was really powerful is a group of developers built a kind of full shopping cart for a Girl Scout cookie sale. And you could buy Girl Scout cookies and then kick out to Coinbase Commerce. And it was just a light bulb moment for me in the sense that, you know, we now have people working on Shopify integrations from Frames. And so I think that there's a version of the world that, you know, if we can really continue to drive user growth for the protocol, you could have some really interesting new novel commerce experiences happening directly in a social feed in a way that is not as centralized and extractive as something like Instagram Shop or, you know, TikTok Shop. Because I think obviously those products are popular because people are there. But if you talk to the people who have to sell on those products, they're kind of saying, basically I can build an audience, but the reality is they can take a tax. And I think for Farcaster to win in terms of just getting to a stage where there are a lot of people using it, we have to kind of, you know, make that commitment to developers ironclad in the sense that you work hard or, you know, a business, you work hard to build an audience or a user base that can't be taken away from you. And that's kind of like what makes Farcaster special, right? That is the marketing.
I would love to ask one follow-up question to that. And then Jesse, I want to hear yours. The world in which I start to see sort of unfold with that type of approach is that like everything we interact with, everything we buy, you know, could be through a Farcaster client, where it's all contextualized. Your entire social feed is intricately linked to the way that you look at the internet and consume the internet in general. Do you see that as like a real potential future?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of work between now and then, right? I mean, the Frames are pretty simple today, but I mean, you could, you know, the classic shop the look or all that kind of stuff like could just magically happen. And it could all be composable and permissionless, right? Every one of those brands could end up having a Farcaster account. You tag the brand, and then it's like, you know, using some AI to detect the actual shirt that you want to buy Taylor Swift is wearing. Click, bun, it all can kind of happen. Can that happen on Web2? Sure. I think that the thing is, because the system is actually open and permissionless and composable, and you have this new economic system with on-chain and low-cost L2s like Base, I'm more optimistic that the innovation rate can happen a lot faster on an open 100%. Protocol than if, you know, run by a centralized company.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go a little further and maybe be more bullish than Dan. I think that within the year, we're going to have in social feed commerce experiences like Buy with Facebook that are 10x better user experience because it's faster and cheaper, and 10x better merchant experience because you're not beholden to a massive platform, and with 10x more creativity because it's an open, permissionless environment to build on. And like, it's going to change the world. And so I think that we now have the primitives and the technology, and it's just about putting it together.
Incredibly bullish. I already have my penny hat coming in. So I will say, for those of you who haven't seen the penny hat frame, it is a great experience in terms of like commerce that is sort of native to the platform in a lot of ways and feels really, really smooth. Jesse, I want to give you one chance to shout out your favorite frame and then we'll wrap up.
Yeah, I mean, shout out to the Coinbase marketing team for doing the penny frame. You can, another commerce experience, you can, if you go to mintapenny.xyz or drop that in Farcaster, you click a button, it mints a penny NFT to your wallet. You can then go to a store and redeem that for a hat for 1 cent. I think it's just a beautiful example of this penny as this outdated piece of technology that costs 3 cents to make one penny. 120 million of them a year are just lost into ether. And now we're repurposing that as a cool digital experience where you can mint it. And then you can get a hat that's a sick little hat that says, make it make sense. So go try that out.
Cool. Well, this was such a wonderful conversation. I feel like the end, once again, changed my brain chemistry a little bit on how I'm thinking about my mental model for Farcaster and what's possible, sort of like contextual social experiences, contextual commerce experiences that are like not only crypto native, but native to the internet in general. So thank you both so much for coming on. Real quick, where can people learn more about both Farcaster and Base?
So Farcaster, farcaster.xyz, get set up pretty easy. I'm dwr.eth on Farcaster. And then if you want to follow me on Twitter because you're not quite ready to jump into Farcaster, I'm DWR on Twitter, where I talk a lot about Farcaster.
And you can join the /bass channel on Farcaster if you want to learn more about bass. That's where everything's happening from a conversation perspective. If you want to get started building, you can go to docs.bass.org. And then I'm always around to help. I'm Jesse Pollock on Farcaster and Twitter and everywhere. So excited to help you build awesome on-chain frames on bass.
Beautiful. I will say, for people who are like worried about making the switch to Farcaster, I've recently tried to move a lot more onto it and it's become incredibly fun to do so. So would highly encourage you to do it. Dan and Jesse, this was so great. Thank you both for coming on the pod.
Thanks for having us.